We've had some really great success with the AI talent surge. That's been a big focus to make sure that folks can have access to shared hiring authorities, and the joint hiring authority has been super successful. We've also been able to attract a lot of AI talent to some of our programs, like the PIF program or the Civic Digital Fellowship.
Today on the Daily Scoop podcast from the Scoop News Group, the role of the federal chief AI officer. My interview from AI Talks with some of the first officials appointed as CAIOs. It's Tuesday, April 23rd, 2024. Welcome to the Daily Scoop podcast, where you'll hear the latest news and trends facing government leaders. I'm the host of the Daily Scoop podcast, Billy Mitchell. Here are today's top headlines. Another cloud provider has received approval to handle classified government information at the secret level. Oracle announced Monday that the Department of Defense has accredited three of its classified air-gapped cloud regions to handle workloads at the secret level, what the department refers to as Impact Level 6 or IL6. The achievement comes after Oracle last August also earned top secret sensitive compartmented information accreditation from the intelligence community. With both that and the latest secret level cloud authorization, Oracle is approved to handle government information at any classification level in the cloud. While the news comes most to the benefit of the DoD, which is expanding its use of cloud in the classified space and at the edge through its joint warfighting cloud capability, it ultimately puts Oracle on a level playing field with its top competitors in the federal cloud space, Amazon, Google, and Microsoft, which have all earned secret and top secret accreditations ahead of Oracle. Google announced its accreditation at the secret and top secret levels just 2 weeks earlier. In other news, nearly 3 years since President Biden issued an executive order to modernize and enhance federal cybersecurity, the federal agencies in charge of implementing it are nearing the finish line on the requirements set out in that EO. Between the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, and the Office of Management and Budget, 49 of the 55 requirements in President Joe Biden's order aimed at safeguarding federal IT systems from cyber attacks have been fully completed, according to a new report from the Government Accountability Office. Another five have been partially finished, and one was deemed to be not applicable because of its timing with respect to other requirements. The GAO says in its report that completing these requirements would provide the federal government with greater assurance that its systems and data are adequately protected. Those federal agencies that aren't in charge of implementing the EO, however, have checked off the vast majority of the boxes in the EO's list. For example, they have developed procedures for improving the sharing of cyber threat information, guidance on security measures for critical software, and a playbook for conducting incident response, the GAO wrote in its report. Additionally, the Office of the National Cyber Director, in its role as the overall coordinator of the order, collaborated with agencies regarding specific implementations and tracked implementation of the order. For more top news and insights at the intersection of the federal government and technology, visit fedscoop.com. If you are unable to make it to last week's AI Talks, well, you truly missed out on a special day. The first ever event featured the top leaders in AI from across the public sector. However, we have a special treat today if you didn't make it. I had the privilege of hosting a dynamic panel on the role of the federal chief AI officer with two of the first federal CAIOs appointed in the role, as well as a top industry AI executive who's working with federal agencies as they appoint and institute that CAIO role. It was my pleasure to be joined by Zach Whitman, CAIO and Chief Data Scientist for GSA, Vinay Singh, Chief Financial Officer and CAIO at HUD, and Dave Vennergrund, VP of AI and Data Insights for GDIT. Let's go now to that conversations at the first ever AI Talks.
All right, well, everybody, welcome to the stage. And as I said, we're really excited to hear about this new role, the Chief AI Officer in the federal government. Obviously, this existed for some time before the EO, but really the EO is what cemented that into place with OMB guidance. So Vinay, Zach, Dave, let's start there with the EO and the corresponding OMB guidance. And would love to hear, you know, as you assume these roles, and Dave, obviously you're seeing things from the industry side, but as people take these roles and really evolve what is known as the Chief AI Officer, how are you interpreting that guidance, that executive order, and how it sets out the parameters for what you're supposed to do as a CAIO? Vinay, maybe we can start with you.
Sure, I'm just trying to adjust to this light right on my bald head. I mean, look, they spell it out, and I do believe, I bucket it like this, essentially starting with managing risks, promoting innovation, which is something new for government overall. Mandating innovation is great. And then essentially coordinating activities, right? Those are the three buckets. And what underpins all those is essentially being a change agent, I think.
And Zach, you've been a chief data officer for quite some time, but now you're the CAIO at GSA. Tell me about the change in that role and sort of how you are interpreting it and what you see as some of your main responsibilities.
Yeah, thanks for the invite. What I really like is the synergy between the data and the analytical space, as well as the foundational impact that this can have. The EO and also the memo that came out really lays out the groundwork that's critical for successful adoption. We can bring in these tools and produce some good outcomes, but without foundational infrastructure that can scale to handle the needs and the compute demands of these models, or the data that's clean and managed well in a productized sense, you're really not going to get the benefit that you're expecting out of that. And I think that system integration perspective is one that is nice to co-locate the CDAIO kind of function along with the chief data officer or chief data scientist type function. We have this empathy for what it's like to try to work with the data and spin up models, and that is where we're trying to lean in and capitalize on this new tech.
That's great. Dave, obviously, like I said, you're in the private sector at GDIT, but obviously you have a role to play within this, and you're working with CAIOs and sort of helping figure out what that path ahead looks like. But tell me about the way you interpret the EO from the outside looking in, and sort of what you see as the role of industry as this new role comes on board.
Yeah, well, thank you. Well, first of all, it is an exciting time. It's a compressed schedule, so we're looking at a lot of government, potential government support, supporting our government partners. We at first thought this might be a super technical role. Now, there is a certain amount of technical issues here, data science, data management, but as you said, it's a change management role. It's setting up governance, inventory, training your workforce, developing your workforce, ensuring governance and risk management. So it's really the comprehensive set of offering that consulting firms, system integrators have been offering for 50 years. The AI part's super exciting to me as a data scientist and a hands-on AI guy, but it's far more broader than that, and it's far more compressed in time. You're being asked to innovate and manage risk and govern all within 1 year.
Yeah, it's quite the timeline, as you said, in this EO. It's, it came out late last October. We're a few months in. I think Drew Michelgard earlier said we're about 150 days since that was issued. I'm curious, there's a lot of deadlines that have been put on agencies, particularly CAIOs, in regards to that. What are some of those key deadlines, whether they're ones you would like to call out because you've already hit them and you're excited by that, or ones that you're really tuned into coming around the corner?
Sure. We've hit the fact that I'm the chief AI officer, so that was a requirement. We have stood up a governance board, so that was also a requirement. We have one coming up on April 27th, too specific to HUD in the executive order, around guidance to tenant screening and advertising of housing, and we're slated to make those deadlines. The rest are in play, as for all agencies, in September, December, and March, I think, yeah.
But good progress so far. Zach, how about you at GSA?
Yeah, we've had some really great success with the AI talent surge. That's been a big focus to make sure that folks can have access to shared hiring authorities, and the joint hiring authority has been super successful. We've also been able to attract a lot of AI talent to some of our programs, like the PIF program or the Civic Digital Fellowship. So we've been having a lot of success in terms of working on the talent aspect. We also have some guidance coming up for Gen AI procurement that will be coming out on the 27th as well. We're really proud of that guidance. And on top of that, we've been rolling out a lot of internal guidance and policy to make sure that we're really set up to eat our own dog food and succeed here.
So good progress on the agency side. Dave, what are the items you're tracking from a deadline perspective that you think have been important or that you are really watching as you move forward from the industry side?
Well, first of all, we take this guidance as directed at the government, but we need to take it as well. So we're looking internally at our own structures, our own governance, We have a very healthy, and across our competitors, we all have an emphasis on governance and risk management, and the ability to say we know how to do this, so we can go to our government partners and say with some assurance, here's a model you might use. The other aspect is depth and force, being able to provide data scientists, change agents, consultants, folks who can bring to bear the skills and experiences in this new demand. I can't imagine that our government partners have enough staff to do this, and that's one of our strengths in industry is to provide support in whatever way that you need it. I would say generative AI, you brought it out, is one of those areas that's terrible and terrific, fascinating and frightening. So we are actively looking at how to use it effectively, safely, responsibly, and leverage it. So we still have those same three pillars, management, governance, and innovation.
So the thing that strikes me as so interesting is that you're all going at this as a new role in a really interesting time as AI comes online within government. So I imagine you don't want to go it alone. You want to lean on each other as CAIOs, and there's going to need to be this level of partnership and collaboration across agency lines. So we've got two CAIOs up here. I'm sure there's a lot of that collaboration and partnership going on, but I'd love to hear more about how you're working behind the scenes with other, your counterparts at other agencies in and out to make sure that you're working in lockstep.
Yeah, thanks. I'd say, just a hat tip to the administration, because OMB does convene us monthly. They are starting to provide support across for all agencies by even just starting three working groups that are going to be stood up around generative AI, I think mitigating risk and acquisition. So that itself is good. But I think it's, for me, it was just, I just started reaching out. So if you're not a military or security agency, you haven't been in AI for, probably ever, like some of us. And so, or have been dabbling around the edges. So I've definitely met with Zach, I've met with HHS, Department of Labor, Department of Ed. I'd say that, I look at it as, let's share some best practices or even next practices. I even reached out and had a good conversation with the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, because as you know, housing, we don't directly hit the citizen. There's a lot of intermediaries, right? Local government, state government, nonprofits, et cetera, and industry. So we need to understand the whole ecosystem. And so it's critical, I think, for us to actually catch up, because this is constantly changing, and to stay at the cutting edge is through collaboration.
Yeah, I'd just jump on that. I think one thing I'm really proud to see is the relationships that are forming between the CAIO board, the council, and then that group also reaching out to the CDO council or the CIO council. We have so much goodwill and harmony happening between these councils, and it's a testament to OMB's organization, but it also speaks to the specificity that we got out of the EO and the memo that gave us a lot of good, strong baselines to work off of, and then the collaborative effort, the idea that we can be a one government front where we're sharing notes and exchanging best practices so that we don't have to reinvent the wheel and ultimately learn from one another and accelerate the development of good policy rather than everyone kind of doing it on their own.
And obviously that partnership doesn't need to end at, agency, federal borders. There's other players, whether it's industry or, as Vinay mentioned, state and local, other non-federal partners. But back to you, Dave. I'd love to hear, how that level of partnership works and that collaboration works between private, public sector, and what some of those other players are in this ecosystem that makes this all blossom and work.
Yeah, well, thank you. I love that you brought in the chief data off, the CDO council, the CISOs, the security are another important partner of yours. So industry collaborates through a variety of mechanisms. ACT IAC is very prominent in bringing government together with industry. Potomac Officers Club, AFSCIA. There are many, I'm sorry if I leave any names out, there are many ways in which we interact on a regular basis. In many events like Mayor Talk and, sorry, there are many ways that we can interact and support each other, and we do. And we love to introduce each other and make a recommendation that talk to so-and-so. The chief AI officers at HHS and VA last fall claimed on stage they were the only two in the world, right? So the world's changing and there's a lot of folks for you to meet.
That's incredible. And it looks like it's a tight-knit group already, although it's still early days. You know, one thing that strikes me as so interesting is when you look at how federal agencies have introduced new chief AI officers, some agencies will select CIOs to take on that hat. Some will select their CDOs to take on that hat. Even in some cases at HUD, the CFO takes on that hat. So what makes the mark of a good CIO? Is there a reason there's a certain person picked in an agency, or is it dependent on that agency, or any other rhyme or reason and why, you know, the person that is introduced in that role takes that role? Vinay, as CFO, maybe give your kind of flavor of the week.
Sure. I don't think we have a report card for 7 months yet, so I don't know how I'm doing. But I will say that, you know, specifically to HUD, we had a conversation. I'm very close with Beth Niblock, our CIO, and we had a great presentation from Lydia Tagavi, our CDO. And so it is getting tighter to these relationships. I think it was just a natural fit at HUD. We, you know, are continuously, like many agencies, constrained on IT, not just funding, but even flexibility. And there's been a lot of great work that Beth has continued with her team in securing kind of the robust platforms that need to exist for AI and non-AI, right? Just to kind of right size and get technology moving. So I think, you know, she and I had talked about this for a while. We didn't know the EO was coming out when it did. But, you know, being CFO, I think, at least personally, my view is being integrated to all the programs already through either the budget process, through the audit process, through the risk process. At HUD, CX is also responsible and reports into the CFO. Having all those pieces, it made natural sense for something like this being a new project. There's a lot of times many CFO shops are incubating projects and then handing them off. And so we will do something similar in terms of me being a political. We will hire a chief AI officer. We will consider where to put it. I think it will go into OCIO again. But I think it could be in the private sector. I know they're thinking about it, but that's my view.
That's great info. Zach, you're a CDO turned CAO, or you hold both roles, but tell me about how that played out at GSA.
Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, going back to the, I think one point that I like to kind of focus on is the breadth of perspectives that we're getting from the different roles that are coming into the CAIO role is, I think, a really healthy perspective. This isn't purely a technical play, and the idea that we're taking multiple perspectives and speaking together without having that the ability to rely on this like common vernacular that all CDOs speak like, or all CISOs, or I think having that breadth of expertise and coming at it from multiple angles gives us a little bit of a better perspective. When I came in, I was a responsible AI official to GSA, and so the natural fit was, let's just continue this. It's an expansion of function, and so I was in place to a degree, and taking that function on was, you know, quite literal to additional work we were doing when it came to establishing common shared infrastructure for our data science program, or establishing common shared scalable compute platform. We are just now integrating a lot more AI capabilities into those, despite already having a baseline where we were doing that. So it just fit quite naturally in our case. But again, I think that like Vinay's function in CFO makes a lot of sense. Having visibility at the financial front gives you far more acuity to what's going on.
Yeah, it makes sense. And it seems like it's a very multidisciplinary sort of arrangement. And it goes to show that AI is a lot more than just a technology, and there's other things that need to be managed. Dave, is there a perspective from you on where it fits best, or you've seen it work best? Or is it, again, it's kind of depends on the agency, who's there, and what their mission is?
I would lean towards it really depends. Just elongate that. The role, as it's described in the UMB, is SES, somebody who's analytical, a change agent, a collaborator, understands the value of data, right? Didn't ask you to be a data scientist, so I missed my chance.
David, I'm going to come back to you because I think this is an important part of it. So much of what's going on in the AI space is coming out of industry. This is really industry-driven, and government's looking to adopt it. And obviously, there's a lot of the compliance and regulatory frameworks that need to happen on top of that in the government space. But again, it's really driven in industry. So how can industry and government partner better on this and become more in lockstep to promote, you know, positive outcomes in the federal government with AI?
Well, there's a lot of facets to that diamond, but I'll just focus on two. One is safety. the NIST AI Safety Consortium is government and industry working together to figure out how do we use these models in a way that's safe and responsible, doesn't impact rights or safety. So we're both working that problem together. And I think that the OMB memos and the executive order really put that front and center, whereas maybe for years that wasn't such a concern. Maybe it was the wonder that you could get out of these squirrels driving tractors, as opposed to how is this going to impact and harm, possibly harm others. So there's the safety issue. And then the other side I would say is procurement. Procuring consulting services is pretty straightforward, but procuring an AI solution with a large data section is still a difficult problem. So, you know, we're still hacking at it, better ways to do it, using cloud resources, which is the fastest way to victory. Even that's still a little bit shaky in government procurement. So I'll just leave it with that, safety and procurement.
That's great. And then same question, slightly different to you, Zach and Vinay. How can industry work better with you as a CAIO on this problem to make sure that AI is being implemented safely, securely, and in a trustworthy manner?
Yeah, I mean, I think we all recognize the impact this can have on fundamental service delivery. And for me, it's all coming down to what are we establishing in the EO and the memo in terms of what are the minimum requirements for rights and safety impacting. I feel like that's a really good benchmark to consider. Like, where are the data coming from? Are there implicit biases in the data? How should this be deployed? What real world testing has been done? Did we have permission to have the data to train it? All of those things are really fundamental to good government service, and anything the industry can do to help us expedite the monitoring and assessment of these tools so that we can be confident that we are doing the absolute best and delivering the best services in an equitable and fair way would only help us.
Yeah, I'd say, I mean, I come from the private sector, so I think one is just knowledge transfer, right? And using what information we're learning to accelerate, perhaps. But two pieces of advice I'd give, and I do this when folks want to talk to me, is make sure you're tying to the mission, which I know you do in pitches, et cetera, but like specifically for AI, how, you know, what are you proposing and what do you know about the agency? If you're already doing work at the agency, like make sure you do your homework. Because this is, I mean, this is very difficult for our teams because we don't, this is, many of us have put on like a third hat. So the more you can come prepared, I think knowing our ecosystems and how you can help us is helpful. I would leave it at that.
So we have literally like a minute left. So let's go with the rapid fire for the three of you. You know, I'm sure you all have big hairy challenges you're working on in that vein of how industry or anyone in this room can help. What's the biggest thing on your mind and that you need help with today moving forward?
I think just trying to articulate better our training, right? So when we think of our workforce, it is all about the different frameworks of responsible AI, and HUD specifically has a very critical mission, and we serve underserved communities. So getting our folks to understand it first and just before even deploying generative AI would be helpful.
Zach.
Yeah, I think it's about delivering real near-term value and building momentum so that we can move forward and start to expand its scope.
Dave, any final thoughts?
I would just add increased general awareness for the users of this technology. We've given the developers a lot of space and time over the years, but now we need to educate a broader spectrum of users who are going to be engaged with AI at different levels throughout their workday.
This was really exciting, guys. Again, Vinay, Zach, Dave, thank you so much for your time. Let's give them a round of applause.
For more on federal chief AI officers, visit fedscoop.com. Thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of the Daily Scoop podcast, available on all podcast platforms. If you've already rated the podcast on your platform of choice, thanks so much. High ratings and good reviews of the show help more people to find it. The Daily Scoop podcast is a production of the Scoop News Group in Washington, D.C. Adam Butler and Carlin Fisher help put the show together, and the entire Scoop News Group team contributes. We'll be back tomorrow with more top headlines. Until then, I'm your host, as always, Billy Mitchell. Thanks so much for listening.